Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with some details on President Trump's proposed budget, which includes a huge increase in military spending and cuts in just about everything else. Learn what programs are slated for the deepest cuts, or complete elimination in some cases, on today's show. Next up, we'll be talking about 10 mysterious deaths and disappearances of Russians linked to the investigation of Donald Trump's Russia ties, including some analysis by a journalist nominated for a Pulitzer Prize 5 times. California Governor Jerry Brown went to Washington, D.C. this week. Learn what his message is to President Trump regarding immigration and deportations, and what that could mean for our state's economy. On Green Scene, hear why scientists will be coming out of their labs and taking to the streets this Earth Day in a march for science. Here in East County, learn about efforts by lakeside residents to get old debris and new illegal dumping on a public preserve in El Monte Valley cleaned up, and how the county and the property owner responded to our inquiries. Some Santee residents are getting a sinking feeling caused by sinkholes threatening several homes. Hear why some homeowners are indicating they plan to sue the city if the damage isn't fixed soon, and why the city is claiming it's not responsible for deteriorating pipes that reportedly caused the damage. A lawsuit is also underway in the case of a Santee boy who lost his life due to a rare disease contracted from a pet rat purchased at Petco, and we'll have details on today's show. Our newsmaker interview today is with Mike Garcia. He's a documentary filmmaker in town making a movie about the run to replace Duncan Hunter. Congressman Hunter is reportedly under investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice for spending campaign money, including taxpayer matching funds, that's your money, folks, on personal expenses ranging from a family vacation to Italy to first-class plane fare for his son's pet rabbit. So far, at least 11 candidates have said they plan to run against Hunter, or run in a special election, should he resign or be removed from office sooner. The candidates range from a nurse to a retired bull rider, and Mike Garcia aims to follow them all on this rowdy campaign trail. On the second half of our show today, learn about some awesome outings in county parks coming up this weekend, and fortunately, it looks like the sun will be shining, making it the perfect time to head outdoors and hit the trail. Then on Destination East County, hear about the top festivals and events coming up across our region, from Anza Borrego Foundation's 50th anniversary party to a hot rod and chili cook-off in Hamul, a famous country music singer in concert at Sequan, plus carnivals, egg hunts, and a bunny train to delight riders of all ages. Then we'll have news about the latest new resident at a local wildlife rescue facility in Alpine, a bouncing baby bobcat. We'll also tell you how to enter our very own East County Photography Contest, hosted jointly by East County Magazine and Assemblyman Randy Vopel. Winners will be published on our news site and displayed at the state capitol. Changes are proposed in trolley and bus lines here in San Diego. Learn how to check out the proposed route changes and offer your comments on the record later in today's show. And finally, from Public News Service, hear about underfunding of water infrastructure and why that's a big concern here in California. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Capitol Report. Donald Trump's proposed federal budget aims to boost military spending by 10% while slashing funds for many other departments and eliminating some completely. Trump wants to cut 100% of funds for public broadcasting such as PBS and NPR and completely eliminate the National Endowment for the Arts and National Endowment for the Humanities. His budget guts funding for the Environmental Protection Agency by 31%, and a bill in Congress would eliminate the agency completely. The EPA was founded by President Nixon to protect Americans from water and air pollution. Red states that backed Trump would not be spared the budget axe, with nearly a 21% cut proposed for the Department of Agriculture and 13.5% cuts in education, including elimination of 20 education programs. The Department of Labor, Commerce, Housing, and Urban Development and the Interior would all have double-digit cuts. Foreign aid money would also face cuts of over 11%. Pell grants for low-income students would be cut by $4 billion. Money for Meals on Wheels, a program that feeds low-income seniors living alone, would also be cut. Although Trump has touted beefing up defense, his budget would cut $1.3 billion of the Coast Guard's $9 billion budget. The Coast Guard not only protects against foreign invasions and rescues boaters in peril, it also apprehended 6,300 undocumented immigrants last year and intercepted many smugglers along our coastlines, playing a vital role in national security. Republicans aim to trim the deficit while bolstering spending on other defense programs, but Democrats are largely opposed to the plan. San Diego Democratic congressional member Susan Davis, in a letter to constituents, pledged, "I will do everything I can to push back against cuts to the programs and services important to my constituents." But with Republicans in the majority in both the House and Senate, it will be impossible for Democrats to block the drastic cuts in Trump's budget without help from a substantial number of Republicans crossing the aisle.
Can it possibly be just coincidence that since Election Day, at least 10 people connected to the investigation into Donald Trump's Russian ties have been assassinated, died under mysterious circumstances, or disappeared? Sean Mullen is a journalist who has been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize 5 times. He's covered 12 presidential campaigns and top stories from the Vietnam War to the impeachment of Bill Clinton. He suggests that these deaths and disappearances are a purge of those with knowledge of Russia's hacking of the U.S. election. In a story published in The Moderate Voice and republished on East County Magazine, Mullen concludes that there is mounting evidence to show that Trump's campaign colluded with the Kremlin to win the presidency by sabotaging Hillary Clinton's campaign, an action that Mullen describes as providing aid and comfort to a hostile foreign power trying to commandeer the process at the heart of American democracy. However, he notes that so far, there is no evidence that the president or his surrogates are directly responsible for the epidemic of mysterious Russian deaths. Mullen has documented 10 of those cases, some of which still could be coincidence. Most infamous is Nikolai Gorokhov. He represented the family of an attorney who mysteriously died in custody in Moscow in 2009 after accusing law enforcement and tax officials of $240 million in fraud. Gorokhov was also a key witness for the U.S. government in a related money laundering suit against a Russian holding company brought by U.S. attorney Preet Bharara, whom Trump fired. On the eve of that court appearance, Gorokhov fell, or was thrown, from the top floor of his Moscow apartment building on March 21st, but he survived and he's hospitalized with severe head injuries. Pro-Russian media has claimed he fell while trying to lift the bathtub up to his apartment when a rope snapped on the eve of his testimony. Another victim was Denis Voronenkov, who was fatally shot on a Kiev street on March 23rd. He was a former colonel in the Russian military and a Putin insider who flew to Ukraine when he became a whistleblower and was preparing to testify about the inner workings of the Putin regime. He was being hunted by Russia's Federal Security Service, Mullen reports, when he was killed. Alex Oronov was a naturalized U.S. citizen who ran a fertilizer business in his native Ukraine, where he died under unexplained circumstances on March 2nd. Oronov reportedly had set up a meeting between Michael Cohen, that's Trump's personal lawyer, and Russian officials, where a peace plan for control of Russian-held Crimea was hatched. Another mysterious death was that of Russia's United Nations ambassador, Vitaly Churkin, widely believed to be a spy. He was rushed to a hospital from his office at Russia's UN mission in New York on February 20th after suddenly becoming ill. The initial report that he had suffered a heart attack was later withdrawn because medical examiners here said the death required further study. Oleg Orovinky, believed to have been instrumental in helping former British spy Christopher Steele compile that explosive dossier detailing Vladimir Putin's alleged blackmail material over Trump, was found dead in the backseat of his Lexus in Moscow on December 26th in what many suspect was murder, although Russian authorities officially claimed it was a heart attack. Yves Chandelon was not Russian, but he was the chief NATO auditor responsible for investigating money laundering involving Russians. He was found in his car in Belgium on December 21st with a single gunshot wound to the head. This is suspected of being a murder made to resemble a suicide. Chandelon was left-handed, but the gun was found in his right hand, and it was not one of the three guns that he owned. Andrei Karlov, Russia's ambassador to Turkey, was assassinated December 19th as he made a speech in Ankara, Turkey. The assassin, a Turkish police officer, shot Karlov in the back and reportedly shouted, "Don't forget Syria," which the Russians had been bombing. Later on the same day, Russian Foreign Ministry diplomat Peter Polshikov was found dead from a gunshot wound in his Moscow apartment. Two spent bullets were found near the body, and the murder weapon was stashed under the bathroom sink. Sergei Mikhailov and Dmitry Dekuchayev worked for the FSB, which was responsible for U.S. election hacking. Both were arrested by Russia in early December and charged with working for the CIA shortly before they disappeared. Mikhailov reportedly was accused of passing on information about Russia's efforts to breach U.S. election systems. Another Russian who may have taken a dive off a roof of the Russian consulate in New York on November 8th was Sergei Krivov. He reportedly suffered blunt force injuries, but Russian officials changed their story and said he died of a heart attack. Krivov was widely believed to be a counter-spy coordinating efforts to prevent U.S. eavesdropping, Mullen reports. Donald Trump has been silent on all of these deaths and continues to praise Russian dictator Vladimir Putin. In the 10th week of his presidency, he has yet to say a harsh word about Putin, who was the target of huge protests over the weekend in Russia and has long been considered not a U.S. ally, but a foe. Meanwhile, a Senate Intelligence Committee investigation into Russian meddling in the U.S. election and potential Trump team ties to the Kremlin has stalled. Committee Chairman Devin Nunes leaked information about the committee's investigation to Trump, angering fellow members for violating the confidentiality of those proceedings. President Trump tried to block Sally Yates, former U.S. attorney, from testifying, and Nunes has now refused to call more witnesses pending a private briefing with intelligence chiefs. That's troubling even to some prominent conservatives. Washington Post's right-wing columnist Jennifer Rubin called the hearings chaired by Nunes a charade. She's urging Democrats to walk out and demand a select committee to conduct an independent investigation. Other troubling matters include Trump's numerous business ties to Russian oligarchs and ties to Russia by his inside circle. For instance, former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, who has been investigated by a foreign bank for money laundering and who reportedly had close ties to a Russian oligarch and Putin ally, was also involved in efforts to rig a Ukrainian election for Putin. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, a retired general, lied about conversations with Russia's ambassador and took a large payment from Russian Times, the official Russian propaganda network, arguably breaking the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. Flynn resigned after these facts were disclosed in the press. The Emoluments Clause of the Constitution prohibits public officials in the U.S. from being enriched by any foreign government or any entity acting on behalf of a foreign government, a clause that many argue President Trump himself has violated due to his business entanglements with Russia and his refusal to disclose his recent tax filings that likely could document those ties. Even the Washington Post's conservative columnist Jennifer Rubin, in her Right Turn column this week, concludes, "The House GOP leadership's utter incompetence and refusal to perform its constitutional oversight obligations have demonstrated that the Republican Party isn't fit to govern." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
California Governor Jerry Brown went to Washington, D.C. this week to stand up for our state's interests and the nation's. In a nationally aired interview on NBC's Meet the Press, Brown cautioned that the Trump administration's threat to cut off funds to California for protecting immigrants could backfire on the Trump administration. Brown noted that California accounts for 12% of the nation's economy, is a center for Pacific exports, and the nation's innovation capital. He warned bluntly, You don't want to mess with California because you're going to mess with the economy, and that could blow up in your face in a gigantic recession and roll the Republicans right out of this town. Trump has called California out of control. But Governor Brown pointed out that California created 400,000 or more jobs last year. Moreover, he said that immigrants are key contributors to innovation and growth in what he called the most prosperous economic engine in the world. If California were a country, it would be the sixth largest economy on the planet. Brown, a Jesuit, had also said he hopes to appeal to the president's spirituality and suggested that deporting hard-working immigrants and building a border wall was more in line with totalitarianism than Christianity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Rebecca Williamson with KNSJ Radio for East County Magazine with a Green Scene Report. The California State Parks Foundation invites you to volunteer to help a local state park get ready for the summer season this Earth Day, April 22nd, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Spring flowers have brought splashes of color across the sunny slopes and green pastures of parks around California. After a record-breaking season of winter rains, California's state parks are flush with wildflowers and wildlife. Winter has transitioned to spring, and that means it's also time for some spring cleaning. This year marks the 19th year of Earth Day spring cleaning in our state parks. It is easy to take our amazing state parks for granted, but these parks, your parks, would not exist without the support of volunteers like you who work to ensure that parks remain vibrant, welcoming, and accessible to all. Over the years, the California State Park Foundation's Earth Day program has provided state parks with much-needed grant funding and the people power needed to complete maintenance and improvement projects. In addition to removing invasive plant species and planting natives, volunteers are needed to clean up campsites, trails, beaches, and fencing. So this Earth Day, you can visit a state park and make a positive difference for our planet and for our community. In San Diego County, you can volunteer this Earth Day at the following state parks: Anza Borrego Desert State Park, Carlsbad State Beach, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, San Alejo State Park, San Pascual Battlefield State Historic Park, or Torrey Pines State Natural Reserve and Beach. To sign up and get more information, you can visit calparks.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Gene Carpenter with the Green Scene Report. A big mess in Lakeside just got worse. Last week, Turcophiles reported on waste materials dumped along a new public trail in Lakeside's El Monte Valley. The San Diego River Park Trail crosses an easement that is owned by the Endangered Habitats Conservancy, which took state and county money to create a preserve on land formerly used for sand mining. The nonprofit acquired the land 5 years ago and promised to clean up the mountain of concrete and debris left from the former sand mining operation. Turco reported, but nothing has been done, and now someone else has illegally dumped a load of even more debris. In January, an Endangered Habitats Conservancy spokesperson told Turco from TV's KUSI that they hoped to start cleanup in 2 weeks, but by late March, it remained untouched. Director Michael Beck, in an email to East County Magazine, said the debris shown on Turco files is not industrial waste, but rather concrete that has been there for over two decades. Beck stated, "We were developing a strategy to remove it before all the publicity happened. We have not broken any promise to clean it up." He adds, "We have been working with the county to ensure our strategy is in compliance with any land use regulations, including the reclamation plan. We have engaged the wildlife agencies to ensure that we will not have biological impacts when removing the materials. We have engaged a contractor to give us a bid to remove. We have found a potential funding source to pay for it. USGS will monitor the removal to ensure that we do not impact reptiles." He said his organization is also working on a very significant restoration project on the Russian River.
But Billy Ortiz, a nature photographer and lakeside resident, calls the waste site a disgrace to the whole community and wants it cleaned up. On Sunday, Ortiz posted new photos on Facebook showing additional debris dumped by a trailer full of what appeared to be remodeling construction waste along the new trail. He asked for public help to identify the culprit. He posted a photo of the trailer's license plate, 4JM3658. Beck told East County Magazine that he has contacted the sheriff's office to report the illegal dumping. East County Magazine contacted Supervisor Diane Jacobs' office as well as Assemblyman Randy Vopel to ask what their offices are doing to compel cleanup of the site. An aide to Assemblyman Vopel said his office is looking into the issue. A staffer for Supervisor Jacob advised us that they have reached out to county code enforcement. Code enforcement confirmed that the Endangered Habitats Conservancy is initiating steps to clear the property without disrupting sensitive habitats or wildlife, with cleanup slated as part of an intensive reclamation plan in place for the property. The staffer said code enforcement has received a complaint and will investigate, which could result in a schedule to assure compliance. The sheriff's department is aware of the illegal dumping, the staffer confirmed, adding that in such cases, the sheriff typically increases patrols. El Monte Valley is a county-designated scenic view corridor, but for now, that view remains marred by mountains of debris, both old and new.
Some Santee residents have a sinking feeling due to sinkholes that have undermined their properties, prompting threats of a lawsuit against the city. The damage was reportedly caused by metal pipe storm drains installed in the 1950s that ruptured and collapsed during the January storms. An attorney hired to represent Sergio Guerra and Vernon Gilmore says the sinkholes have affected the stability of their homes and the land beneath the residences on Heartland Circle, where 6 to 8 foot holes have opened up. The attorney, Patrick Catalano, claims the sinkholes have caused damage that will cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to repair for each home. Gilmore told NBC7 he cares for his aging mother-in-law and a 3-year-old grandson. He says, "I thought this is where I was going to stay forever," but adds, "If it's not safe, it's not worth staying around." The city doesn't own the drainage easements, and the old metal pipes are on private property. Although city staff has said the city isn't responsible for the pipes, the Santee City Council and Mayor John Minto initially approved an offer to start repair work up to $75,000, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. But Catalano told council that's not enough, and he says there are more property owners with similar issues near Mast Boulevard and Carlton Hills Boulevard. He says 4 more lawsuits will be filed. The attorney argues that the city has made repairs on the line before and that further, under state law, when a city uses pipes on private property to funnel water from a public street, the pipe is considered part of the city's water system, so the city is responsible for its upkeep. The homeowner's attorney rejected the city's offer and asked that Santee pay for 100% of repair costs to the properties. Because of the legal threat, council adjourned to closed session and promptly withdrew its offer to immediately begin repairs. So for now, nothing is being done to fix the damage or prevent it from getting worse. City staff estimates that there are 95 corrugated metal pipe storm drains on private property in the city, similar to those that failed. So problems faced by Santee homeowners could become part of a much bigger problem, leaving even more city residents with a sinking sensation. On Santee Today's current news page on Facebook, resident Barbara Romeo asked why the city was taking what she viewed an irresponsible attitude toward the sinkholes. She urged city officials to suck it up and repair the problems. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Trial is underway in San Diego in a case filed against Petco for selling a pet rat that allegedly killed Aiden Pankey, a 10-year-old boy in San Diego who died of rat bite fever in 2013. An earlier court ruling paved the way for the suit to proceed. In that earlier case, the judge wrote, "The sale of pet rats by Petco in a diseased condition implicates strict liability principles. Thus, the sale of pet rats may be considered a product, and plaintiffs may pursue their strict liability cause of action." Petco had tried to argue that since it had customers sign release forms warning of rare but potential risks, it should not be liable for the child's death from the infection. But the judge found that customers should be able to hold companies responsible for making sure that their suppliers are providing products that are safe, in this case, pets that are free of potentially lethal diseases. Petco does not comment on pending litigation, but has previously said that it adheres to strict standards of care for the animals that it sells, 10 News reports. The pet rat was a gift from Aiden's grandmother, and the boy's death has left his family heartbroken. His parents say their main goal in filing a lawsuit is to help others by forcing Petco to make sure the pets it sells are safe, so that what happened to Aiden won't happen to anyone else's child. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Kim Cooney.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today my very special guest is Mike Garcia, and he is an independent filmmaker with One Putt Digital. He's here because he's doing a documentary film on the 50th Congressional District race. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Good afternoon, Mary.
So what made you decide to choose Duncan Hunter's district, Congressman Hunter's district, for this documentary?
The idea came to me when one of the candidates contacted me to provide service for a website. And in looking at the race, I live in La Mesa, and I started an indivisible group here in La Mesa, and there's a great deal of passion for replacing Duncan Hunter in District 50.
And why is that? What do you think the main reasons are that people want to see somebody else?
I think that the main motivation is this dark cloud hanging over everybody's head. That's President Trump. It's difficult for me to say President Trump, but that has motivated a lot of people to join groups and become politically active where they never were politically active before.
Now, Duncan Hunter has been an early supporter of Donald Trump long before he became president, and he's continued to support him even through some of the most controversial aspects of his presidency, such as basically being, you know, shouted down at his own town hall in Ramona because he would not support an independent investigation into Trump's Russia ties, for example. This is a very red district, though, heavily Republican. His father, of course, was congressman for many years before him. Do you believe that he could be vulnerable?
I do. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I decided to put this project together. The Hunter family is no stranger to controversy, and we think that even though he is in a red district or a Republican district, there is an appetite for change. He's right now involved in a DOJ investigation regarding his campaign finance.
Yeah, and we should clarify on that. When people hear the term campaign finance, that can mean a lot of things. It can be something as simple as, you know, late filings on campaign donations, something like that, failing to report maybe a large donation that somebody forgot to turn in, all the way up to very serious things. And we're talking in his case about tens of thousands of dollars in campaign finance donations, including taxpayer money. These are matching federal funds, taxpayer money, that he's been accused of using for personal purposes. And the UT did an investigation where they looked into other people that faced similar kinds of investigations for basically being accused of doing the same thing that he's accused of. And two of them wound up in prison. One of them is still facing federal charges as we speak, and the fourth one is getting ready to go before a grand jury. And charges that have been filed include not only fraud, but things like theft of public funds and IRS tax fraud. You know, a lot of times this stuff was not properly reported. So there's no shortage of candidates coming out of the woodwork. On the Democratic side of the aisle alone, we've seen 11 people step forward to say that they're going to challenge Hunter in the 2018 election, if he stays in office that long, that is, if there's not a special election due to a resignation or maybe him potentially even being arrested or convicted of a crime. So is your documentary going to focus only on the progressive side of the aisle, or will you
be also looking at any Republican challengers that may come forward, or Libertarians, or whoever else throws their hat in the ring?
Well, we're looking at it as if we received a backstage pass to a really great show. We're going to be looking at all of the candidates, all of the issues, all of the groups that have been energized by this political climate that we find ourselves in, and just try and give people a look at what happens behind the scenes in a hotly contested race.
What's been the most surprising thing you've found so far?
The most surprising thing I've found so far is the level of participation amongst new people to politics, people who had never considered getting involved and going to a town hall or a campaign event. They, you know, have very busy lives. They're raising their children. They're taking care of their families. And now, all of a sudden, in this political climate, they have decided that it's in their best interest to participate in their local politics.
Yeah, it's fascinating times. I've never before in all the years of covering this seen large protests out there outside of Duncan Hunter's office, seen a town hall forum in Ramona, which is the conservative heart of his base, where there were more progressive people there, or at least people who were not happy with his policies. People were shouting, they were yelling, they were holding up the red disagree signs, and I think that it really threw him for a loop, maybe. I don't think he was expecting to have to come back and face that.
No, I don't think he was expecting it. In fact, I don't think any of the congressmen or senators who have been facing these indivisible groups and the Our Revolution group that was Bernie Sanders, or the Together We Will group, which was an offshoot of the Hillary Clinton campaign. All of these groups have come together with a common interest. And I don't think any of the Republicans who have been seeing these numbers of people, enthusiastic, motivated people, saw this coming.
Yeah. What is your background as a filmmaker?
Actually, I spent a dozen years in the mortgage industry.
Really?
Yeah, from 1997 to 2010. And when that came to an end, I decided I wanted to leave.
That's with the mortgage crash, basically, the housing
crash,
market
yes.
collapse.
I rode that entire roller coaster. And when I decided to get off of that roller coaster, I went back to school to change careers. And then the Occupy Wall Street movement came on the scene. And because I had spent a dozen years in the mortgage industry, I witnessed firsthand the underwriting regulations being decimated, and the fraudulent appraisals that were coming in to give collateral to these loans. And so my first thought was, I come from this background, I know a lot about it, I want to film it. And my first thought was to make a documentary film. And then because of my background and meeting the people in Occupy Wall Street, they actually invited me in and I became involved. But that was my first thought of making a documentary film. Mm-hmm. I have filmed a lot of their events, and so this is just a brand new adventure.
Well, that's fascinating. Do you see any parallels or any similarities between the rise of the Tea Party, which of course was so influential in Republican politics in recent years, and the rise of the Occupy? And are these two movements as far apart as it may seem, or have you found in talking with people that there maybe is some common ground out there?
There is definitely common ground. The Tea Party originated because of the bailouts that were provided after the Wall Street crash.
Right. People were angry. They were hurt. They felt betrayed, like the rug had been pulled out from under them.
Absolutely. Similarly, the Occupy Wall Street people were angry because there wasn't any justice. There were no criminal cases brought, and the bailouts just provided the banks an opportunity to repeat their behavior. So essentially, the two groups have a lot in common.
Yeah, and yet now we're seeing the Trump administration wanting to roll back the protections that were put in place on the predatory lending that was intended to prevent a recurrence of what happened, and yet now they're rolling that back. I'm wondering if some of the Tea Party supporters might feel a little bit betrayed by that particular action.
Well, they certainly should. The best thing that we could support, I, in my opinion, as someone who's involved in the indivisible movement, is to support strengthening the Dodd-Frank Act, and also get a new version of the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act, for people who don't know, was enacted after the Great Depression, and it helped keep us from this economic roller coaster, boom and bust economy for 80 years. Mm-hmm. And once that act was repealed, we found ourselves in the situation in 2008.
What do you view as the key issues in the 50th Congressional District that would be sort of those swing issues, those cross-the-aisle issues that might get a moderate voter or somebody who's usually votes or has always voted Republican to consider crossing the aisle and vote for somebody else?
The first issue, I believe, is health care. As the saying goes, all politics is local. And I think the issue that brings more people out to vote at this particular time than anything else and thing that people are talking about the most is healthcare. I think that people are getting tired of being treated as consumers, mm-hmm. because when it comes to healthcare, they're patients. I think that's one of the things that makes Duncan Hunter vulnerable is he tends to view people as consumers. And when it comes to healthcare, when we get sick, we're patients.
It seems to me when I talk to people on the healthcare issue, too, that a lot of times they're not completely happy with what the party line is for any. On the one hand, we have Republicans saying, you know, all Obamacare bad, must get rid of it, but their plan to replace it was actually worse in many cases for consumers, especially older people and a pregnant mother or something, or a poor person. And then we have Democrats saying, Obamacare perfect, we must not touch, and you know, it helped many, many people, but there were some flaws in there, and there's some states where it worked better than others, and there's some people where it worked better than others, and, you know, some have cheaper health care and some are paying more. What's the answer there? I mean, if a candidate is running and they want to cut through all of that, is there a point where they just need to be a little bit honest about it and say, let's take the best of all worlds here and not act like there's a sacred cow out there that we can't touch?
Well, as a filmmaker, I wouldn't dare to say that I have the answers. Mm-hmm. I think at this point, I consider my job to be to capture the opinions of people.
Sure.
Whether they've had a good experience under the ACA or whether they have a more libertarian attitude that healthcare is, people should fend for themselves.
And we do hear that a lot in this district.
Absolutely. I'm not going to pretend to have an answer. I'm here to capture people's opinions. It's just part of the story.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this pack of candidates that's running out there.
I think that's part of the reason there are so many candidates running is people, the Democratic Party especially, you know, sort of senses blood in the water like a shark. And now all these candidates feel like they have an actual legitimate chance to win.
Yeah, 11 of them that we've heard so far, and that's just in the Democratic Party.
So I haven't had an opportunity to contact all of the candidates yet. I am looking forward to the gathering that they're going to have at the Democratic Party Club where they're going to put on a candidates forum. We reached out to them to tell them we were making a film, and they've been great. They've invited us to come backstage and talk to all of the candidates and talk to the people involved. So we'll have an opportunity to interview everybody then.
Sounds great. As a political observer, do you believe there can be a risk to one party running too many candidates if the other circles their wagons around just one or two?
There absolutely seems to be a risk of that. It seems like you're maybe diluting your opportunity to win in a vulnerable district. However, Duncan Hunter is an incredibly vulnerable candidate, and that's just in my opinion and mm-hmm. one of the reasons why we're making this film. Right now, the most popular Democrat is Bernie Sanders. He's being invited on all the shows. People can't get enough of him.
He seems to have a knack of speaking. You know, it's odd because he's called himself this democratic, socialist, Jewish guy, old guy, and yet he goes around to these red states and he's holding town halls now. It's not even the election anymore, but going and just sitting down with people and talking about health care, and he speaks from the heart, and he seems to have a way of just connecting. Of course, he's from Vermont, a rural district. You know, he relates to gun owners and farmers and all these guys. It's pretty interesting. So are you saying that you think that a candidate of the Bernie Sanders mold could actually connect with voters in the rural red parts of East County?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. Bernie Sanders' appeal has really stretched across progressives, millennials, people who have come from all walks of life. I attended one of the Bernie Sanders rallies here in San Diego, and the diversity of people that attended that rally was amazing.
Yeah, there was certainly a lot of enthusiasm there. We were there covering that as media also. So when will your documentary be available?
We plan on filming the entire campaign from now until actual election day. It will be available after the election.
Okay, so you're not looking to influence the election in any way with this. This is a nonpartisan or not taking sides on any one candidate over another candidate, just studying this as sort of a political science project, so to speak.
Right. We think it's going to be a very interesting campaign and a story that people will enjoy seeing.
Absolutely. Do you have a working title yet for that documentary?
We do. The Race to Replace Duncan Hunter.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
This weekend's weather forecast is for sunny skies and pleasant temperatures, with highs in the low 70s. It's a perfect time to head outdoors and enjoy activities along local parks and trails. The County of San Diego has several special activities this weekend. On Saturday, April 1st, no fooling, activities include an introduction to fishing on Lake Morena, arts and crafts at Dos Picos Park in Ramona, and an extreme hiking challenge at El Capitan Preserve in Lakeside. Then, on Sunday, April 2nd, your options include a spring flower hike at the Santa Isabel Preserve in Julian, Hawk Talk at Lake Morena Regional Park, where you can see raptors up close, a Sunday stroll at Oak Oasis Park in Lakeside, or a hike in William Hayes County Park in Julian. You can find these and more events in county parks by visiting countynewscenter.com and click on the events calendar. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes an anniversary party for the Anza Borrego Foundation, Julian Gold Rush Days, the Peg Leg Smith Liars Contest, a harp concert, veterans sharing history from the Korean War, and more.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including a spring carnival at Lake Jennings, Sweet Pea Day at Summers Pass Farms, a taste of Julian, bunny train rides, an extravaganza, a butterfly festival, country music star Clint Black at Saquon, and a spring concert by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many others.
On April 1st, no fooling, the Anza Borrego Foundation will hold a day-long celebration commemorating its founding 50 years ago. The ABF will throw a party to look back at its accomplishments to support the Anza Borrego Desert State Park and set the mood for the next 50 years. There's still time to register for the whole day of events, which includes field tours, a special 50th anniversary brew created by Nickel Beer Company, silent and live auctions, live music, and more. The party will be at the Anza Borrego Desert Research Center in Borrego Springs. To register for the party and tours, visit the abf.org/50th celebration.
Julian Gold Rush Days celebrates the discovery of gold in this mountain town and invites visitors to learn more about its history with a weekend of entertainment including gold panning, tomahawk throwing, candle dipping, and more on April 1st and 2nd. Located at the Julian Mining Company in Winola, the old-fashioned mining camp will offer reenactors, an arts and crafts market, food and drink, a petting zoo, pony rides, and plenty of family fun. For more information, visit juliangoldrushdays.com.
Every year on the first Saturday of April, the Anza Borrego Desert State Park attracts storytellers from all over the globe to compete in the annual Peg Leg Smith Liars Contest. This year's event will be held on April 1st, starting at dusk. Thomas L. Smith, better known as Peg Leg Smith, was a mountain man, prospector, and spinner of tall tales in the 1800s. Legends about his lost gold mine have grown through the years, and many people have searched the desert for its fabulous wealth. All comers are welcome to enter the contest. Sign up is on arrival at the contest site held at the Peg Leg Smith Memorial, about 7 miles east of Borrego Springs, along Route S-22. Tall tales should be about lost gold and or Peg Leg Smith. Costumes and other original touches are always appreciated by the crowd and judges. For more information on this annual contest, visit BorregoSpringsChamber.com.
The San Diego Harp Society will present this annual concert featuring young local harp players at the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center on Sunday, April 2nd at 3 p.m. Seating is first come, first served. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
Lemon Grove Historical Society's next History Alive event will present three members of the Chosen Few, veterans from the Battle of Chosin during the Korean War, a 17-day battle fought in sub-zero weather against all odds. You can hear their stories and see artifacts from the battlefield on April 6th at 7 p.m. in H. Lee House Cultural Center in Lemon Grove. For more information, you can call 619-460-4353.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents The Dresser, that opened in March and continues through April 15th. The play focuses on a troupe of Shakespearean actors struggling to keep their group going in the midst of World War II air raids. For tickets and details, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Thousands of eggs and 1,700 pounds of trout are among the attractions at the Spring Carnival at Lake Jennings, slated for Saturday, April 8th from 9 to 2 p.m. The event will also feature free paddle boating for the whole family, a kids' pond for children under age 10, rainbow trout fishing, and, of course, an egg hunt. The carnival kicks off spring break, when Lake Jennings will be open every day from April 7th to April 23rd. Camping is also available. You can reserve a campsite online or a teepee by visiting lakejennings.org or call 619-390-1623.
It's Sweet Pea Day at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs on Saturday, April 8th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can cut your own bouquet starting at 11 a.m. until the beautiful blooms are gone. You're invited to weave through a towering sweet pea maze in full glory. You can also picnic on a grassy area or enjoy live music in the coffee bar's shady pavilion while savoring springtime in East County. For details and directions, visit summerspastfarms.com.
The Jamul Kiwanis Club is revving up for its 9th annual Hot Rod and Chili Cook-Off on April 8th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Pio Pico, Thousand Trails, and Jamul. Guests can savor chili tasting, check out classic hot rods, cool off in a beer garden, or vie for prizes and drawings in a silent auction. For more information, you can visit jamulkiwanis.org.
The 9th annual Taste of Julian will be held on April 8th, serving up a rural dining adventure. Taste of Julian is a self-guided culinary tour of unique restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For tickets and details, go to visitjulian.com.
Looking for a new way to celebrate the Easter holiday with your family? Hop aboard the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's Bunny Train, complete with a train ride, a visit from the Easter Bunny, and an Easter egg hunt as you travel through our beautiful backcountry. Bunny Train rides are available April 8th, 9th, and 10th, with several departure times. You can purchase tickets at the Campo Depot. For details, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
The City of Santee and Santee Lakes present the 14th Annual Spring Extravaganza at Santee Lakes Recreation on Saturday, April 15th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Kids of all ages can enjoy games and activities including carnival rides, pony rides, a petting zoo, inflatable jumps, spring crafts, and live entertainment by Primo DJ. Egg hunts run continuously during the event on Egg Hunt Island for children ages 4 through 8 and in the Egg Hunt Basket area for those ages 3 and under. Parents, be sure to bring your child's basket for all of those eggs. Food will be available for purchase, or families are welcome to bring a picnic and enjoy the park. For details, visit SanteeLakes.com.
The 18th Annual Spring Harp Fest, showcasing harmonica players' musical jam fest, will be held Saturday, April 15th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa. Donations from this event are used to purchase harmonicas for local schools. Get the lineup of talent scheduled at springharpfest.org.
Clint Black, the country music superstar, is back with his first album in 10 years, and he'll be performing at Saquon's Live Up Close Theater on April 23rd and 24th. Black has sold over 20 million albums worldwide, including 22 number one hits. Recordings such as A Better Man, Killin' Time, Like the Rain, When I Said I Do, and Nothing But the Taillights have led to honors from the Country Music Association, the Academy of Country Music, the Grammys, and the American Music Awards, as well as membership in the cast of the Grand Old Opry. For tickets and details, visit Saquon.com.
The Water Conservation Garden at Queen Mecca College will host its Spring Butterfly and Garden Festival on Saturday, April 29th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities include butterfly pavilion and garden tours, butterfly releases, face painting, kids' activities and craft vendors, animal exhibitors, educational exhibits, and presentations, plus edible, ornamental, and native plant sales. You can also sign up for landscape design consultations. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present its spring concert on May 7th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the College Avenue Baptist Church, performing Mozart's Requiem, one of the master's greatest works. In addition, the musical groups will present a salute to Andrew Lloyd Webber, showcasing his unforgettable Broadway musical songs from Phantom of the Opera, Cats, and more. For tickets and details, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, an animal sanctuary in Alpine, has a new resident, a bouncing baby bobcat. Weighing in at just 8 ounces, the bobcat kitten is believed to be only about 10 days old. The kit was found near a neighborhood pool in Rancho Bernardo with no mother, so it was brought to a nearby pet hospital that in turn contacted Lions, Tigers, and Bears. The young bobcat is being bottle-fed and doing well, but requires too much human contact to be returned to the wild, so he'll become a permanent resident at Lions, Tigers, and Bears. Bobby Brink, owner of the facility, reminds area residents that if you find a bobcat or other wild animal, it's best to leave it alone and don't touch it, even if it's injured. Instead, call a native species rehabilitation organization or contact Lions, Tigers, and Bears so that the animal in need can be safely handled to maximize the chances that it can be returned to the wild. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine. We're hosting a photography contest, and we want to see your best images taken in San Diego's East County. The contest is co-sponsored with Assemblyman Randy Bopel, who represents East County. The winning photographs will be displayed in East County Magazine and in the state capitol in Sacramento. Categories that you can enter include wildlife, landscapes, cities and towns, activities, and people. All entries must be received by April 30th at 5 p.m. to be eligible. Each photo must be submitted in JPEG or GIF format and must be 4 megabytes or smaller in size. All photographers grant a non-exclusive right for East County Magazine to publish the winning photo on our site, in our archive and newsletter, and for Assemblyman Vopel to display the winning photos at his Capitol office and in his newsletter. If your photo shows a recognizable image of a person, then you must also include a model release. You can submit your photos along with your name, the title of the photo, and your address and phone to editor@eastcountymagazine.org and ccgeorgie.ryan@asm.ca.gov. You can find all of these rules at eastcountymagazine.org and just click on our Best of East County section for details. And please send us your best shots.
The Metropolitan Transit System is proposing 62 changes in trolley and bus route schedules to reflect changing demographics demands, and they're asking for public comments. You can view the proposed changes at sdmts.com/top, T-O-P, and submit your comments no later than April 10th. The proposed changes came after an evaluation last year of routes and schedules across all geographic areas in our region. If approved, the changes are expected to roll out starting in June, with completion later this year. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The U.S. is drastically underfunding water projects, putting communities at risk for a catastrophic failure, according to a new report from the U.S. Water Alliance. Advocates for better water infrastructure are flooding Washington, D.C., so to speak, for Water Week 2017. The report found that the U.S. is only funding one-third of water infrastructure needs, and our drinking and wastewater systems recently earned a D grade from the American Society of Civil Engineers. Radhika Fox, director of the U.S. Water Alliance, says the proper investment would be a boon to the economy.
If we were to close that investment gap, we would drive economic growth in this country. The report found that closing that infrastructure gap would create over 1.3 million jobs.
The report notes that 40 years ago, 60% of our water projects were funded by federal dollars. Now that figure is just 9%, with most of the money coming from local levies. Fox says she's optimistic that Congress will fund more water projects this year, as both parties have voiced support for a major infrastructure bill. Fox notes that even though the Golden State has gotten some much-needed rain, conservation projects remain essential.
The investments that California is trying to make around reuse and having that broadly utilized across the state is really helping to stretch our very limited water supplies.
The U.S. has seen multiple major water disasters in recent years in Flint, Michigan, in Toledo, Ohio, and in the Florida Everglades. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boykel, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.